Hi, everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions. I'm your host, Chuck Zarowski. Normally, we record from the world-famous Strength Depot gym in Plymouth, Michigan, but today we're doing something a little different. We're doing a Skype call. About a month ago, I went and I did a seminar, or I attended a seminar in Strength Haven, Dan Gibson's gym in Indiana. The seminar, we were real excited for. A majority of us from our gym went to the seminar, and it was to be with Eddie Cohn and Josh Bryant. Now, anybody in the strength industry knows these people. Eddie Cohn, obviously, is the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time, and he didn't disappoint. Eddie was talking to everybody. He was, you know, just a fantastic guy. He was helping us out, and he was just a really great guy. And then we started talking to Josh Bryant. Now, for those who don't know who Josh Bryant is, Josh Bryant at 22 years old was one of the first person to bench 600 pounds raw. Now, I mean, I don't know if you guys are like a lot of you people are into strength, and everybody in this podcast listens to, you know, that's listening is into strength. But 600 pounds at 22 years old, it's just unheard of. And not only is Josh like a world record holder as far as for like, you know, powerlifting, I believe he owns over 12 world records. But Josh is also one of the most incredible coaches you're ever going to see. His eye for detail is amazing. He's written several books. I'd like to talk about them. But today we actually were very excited, and I've been very excited to actually get a chance to sit down and talk to Josh Bryant. So, Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here, Chuck.
Nah, you guys were great at the seminar. How did that Eddie Cohn seminar come about?
Dan Gibson, he had contacted me, and we had talked about doing something for a while. And we talked about, you know, since we probably get a good turnout, we need a second person. And obviously, my go-to there was Ed Cohn. I mean, and then that's what Dan wanted too, is I think he's actually, like, for instance, with the squat video he did with Mark Bell, I think it's the best tutorial for squatting on the internet, because Eddie's not trying to, like, you know, sell you on something further. He's not trying to, like, do this or that. It's just to teach you how to squat. So I think that's what impressed me about him, is he's the, you know, I think he's the best at picking apart and teaching technique too. So, and we've always, you know, agreed on a lot of stuff, because I growing up, he was one of the people that mentored me. So that's kind of how we hooked up and started doing some seminars together.
That's not a bad mentor to have.
Not at all.
So when we were at the seminar, I realized, like, you know, like, Eddie was picking me apart. Like, he was telling me to, like, you know, as far as for my bench, my squat, my deadlift, but he was actively engaged with people, and you did the same thing. I mean, honestly, like, I think that's the very first seminar I've been that it was a nonstop, like, educational opportunity, because I kept getting picked up, or Eddie was talking to me about my bench press, and he's like, you know, because I benched quite narrow, and Eddie was like, you know, you got to kind of turn in your try and bend the bar a little bit more and turn in your wrists a little bit more, or, yep, you know, just to try and get a little more lat involvement. And as soon as I did that, like, you know, you could tell a huge difference. And then he was telling me, you know, get your depth and squat, idiot, and that type of stuff. So he was picking me apart pretty good. But how'd you get involved in this whole strength game, Josh?
Well, I guess starting back, my dad used to play racquetball at the YMCA. And I was in, you know, since I was before, as long as I can remember, he'd bring me to play racquetball. And I was really obsessed with WWE, and he would take me to watch matches and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted muscles like the guys I was watching. So when he'd take me to play racquetball, you know, I would kind of sneak off and go in the weight room and do things till I got kicked out of there. You know, then come back the next day and do it again till I got kicked out of there. So I pretty much grew up around the weight room. My dad was a All-American in track and field in college, but he never pushed lifting on me. He just kind of knew I wanted to do it and helped facilitate the opportunity to do so. Because so fast forward to when I was 12, I started lifting seriously at the YMCA. And I got he kind of told me some basic things to do. And then I started talking to other people there, kind of figuring things out. Then when I was 14, one of his best friends named Steve Hall was a powerlifter. And he was a real good powerlifter back in the 80s. He had benched, you know, mid fives kind of before anybody was really doing it very often, and took me under his wing at age 14. And that was kind of it, because it kind of got me hooked at that point, because at that point I was in eighth grade. So I was boxing, and I went to boxing 6 days a week, 2 hours a day. And I was very strong because I was lifting there, but it was like, you know, I was running all the time and boxing all the time. So by hooking up with Steve at that point in time, then stopping boxing to get ready for football, it was sort of like synergy in the weight room happened. I ended up going, like, for my bench press being at 235 to 275 over about 10 weeks, just because I think, you know, obviously training correctly. And then, of course, you know, not throwing, you know, thousands of punches every day.
Yeah.
And so it kind of worked out perfectly. And then,
how old were you when you were 235? Was this still when you were in eighth grade?
That was in eighth grade. And okay. Then I got up to 275 before I started. Well, actually 285 before I started ninth grade, because, and I think a large part of that was, again, like stopping the boxing and then, you know, hooking up with Steve and training correctly. So I think that's what, I guess, kind of what I'm saying is it kind of all worked out in a sense for lifting, because I think if I would have, you know, continued to box, I would have kept lifting obviously and still been strong, but not to the same level. And then if I wouldn't have met Steve, I wouldn't have made the same kind of gain. So it ended up like, it was almost like it was meant to be.
You know, boxing's one of those things that's, you know, you're talking, the conditioning is just through the roof.
Uh-huh.
And not only like, you know, not only as far as for being physically strong, but the endurance of it, being able to, like, you know, maintain your strength throughout, like, you know, however many rounds you're going to fight. It's, you know, that had to condition you for this. I mean, your GPP had to be off the hook anyway when you started this.
Like, yeah, I got to the point where I was only allowed to spar older people. And I used to have to, if there were anybody like, you know, that was high school age or something when I was in junior high, they'd have, by eighth grade, they would bring in a few different people and make them go, they'd switch around. So I go one guy next round, somebody else next round, like six rounds of sparring that way. And it was just like my conditioning. I think all it was is they told me when I first arrived, they didn't think I was going to make it because I was too tight. And, you know, just, but then I just started going so often. And that kind of opened up the door to everything I've done because, you know, for instance, in writing books, I was initially like in college, I tested into, you know, remedial, quote unquote, bonehead English. I always got low scores in English and stuff like that. But after the boxing thing of going in there and not really being natural at it, but how much I picked it up over that amount of time going 6 days a week, since I mean, everybody else going 2 days a week, I'm going there, you know, three times as often and practicing at home and doing extra conditioning at home. I went from kind of like, you know, if can this guy make it to like, I'm no longer allowed to spar with kids my own age type of thing overnight. I mean, over a few months. So that kind of opened up the possibility, you know, that anything's possible with the right focus and mindset and work ethic.
I think too, is like, you know, I boxed too when I was younger.
Oh, cool.
And my grandfather was a pro boxer. And I think I've referenced this before on the shows, but my grandfather, you know, like I had an issue with anger when I was, you know, when I was young. It was just due to my childhood. Anyways, long story short, I come home in my garage. This is back in the 1970s.
Okay.
I come home and my garage was basically a warehouse gym. My grandfather had taken the garage and put a heavy bag up, put a speed bag up, a Makawara board, you know, for martial arts, that type of a thing. And
yeah,
he had mirrors up. He had the whole like warehouse gym thing going on back in the 70s.
Sounds like my garage.
Yeah. And he made it so it was like something that was like, you know, I needed a direction, and yeah, boxing was kind of my direction. And then from there, the weights took on probably not the same as you. I mean, I'm not freakishly strong like you are, but it was, I think, that drive and the conditioning on top of like the willpower to continue and persevere. I think boxing has still leads me until this day.
Absolutely. So, same with wrestling. I've never wrestled competitively, but I've noticed the same thing. It's like, I remember when I walked in there and I got done with football in eighth grade, and they're like, kind of like, oh yeah, you know, you do this, you know, 2 days are going to be a joke to you. And I was like, I mean, I remember even like by the time I've been done for a few years boxing, like going into, you know, 2 days, senior year, I was a captain on the football team. And I used to I'd have talks with my coach saying, are you sure we're doing enough? Can we condition more? Because it was just so easy after that. I mean, it was just such a joke with football two-a-days compared to if you've ever boxed. There's nothing like it.
Well, you know, not only the win, but, like, if you have somebody who's never boxed, try holding your arms up for just 3 minutes and getting punched in your arms. And somebody just whacking you, and you're trying to react to it. And then, you know, do it for another, you know, 10 rounds and see what happens.
Well, yeah. I remember going in there being, like, not I guess, almost like overweight or anything, but, like, definitely not, like, you know, cut, quote, unquote. And I remember after boxing for about 5 months, I loved it because we were playing at school, you know, every chance I'd get, like, I was kind of shy around girls, but then I had a six pack I could show off to everybody.
And that
was a game changer. Lack of social graces was made up by the six pack.
We've talked about this before, but, you know, like, it's funny how a lot of us will do that for girls initially. You know, we'll do sports or whatever for girls and just the opposite sex. But then we grow to love it, and there's something about it that, you know, you go in kind of like looking for one thing, but you're finding something totally different.
Yeah, I wasn't going in for this, but at the same time, I ain't stupid. When I got momentum going, I'm going to use it.
Absolutely. Hey, you referenced wrestlers, and you have a new book out called Grapple Strong.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. So my business partner, my best friend, Dom Benchia, he was a college wrestler, and he is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and actually went down to Brazil in 2002, I think, and won their world championships. So we've kind of combined forces with a lot of our stuff like Jailhouse Strong and things like that. And we had we'd come up with some different training programs that have been successfully used by grapplers and people he works with a lot. So we finally figured, why not put it on print, because we think we have a good idea of what's going on. Because so basically, I think the easiest way to explain it, sort of what we call the funnel theory, going from more general to more specific. So for instance, there's like one part in there that's like a limit strength program for grappling. So that's kind of where a lot of your high school kids would start off, because a lot of them aren't doing any sort of strength training. So if you put them on a pretty basic strength training program, you know, that's going to do a lot for them. So like, for instance, you hear someone, you know, say, you know, all you ever need is like, say, 5-3-1 for wrestling. You know, they're not, I don't agree with that. But at the same time, if you've never trained before, you can look like, you know, a genius by implementing that program before, because they just by getting an amount of limit strength, you're going to get better. So as you approach that threshold, you know, you start getting those, you know, say you're deadlifting 2.5 times your body weight. You know, at that point, is it really worth, you know, trying to push it to pass three times, or is there's a risk to benefit ratio, and there's other qualities you can benefit from. So that's what we're kind of talking about, is bringing your limit strength up to a good base level. And then from there, like, you specify more.
That makes sense. Honestly, it makes sense in almost any sport, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, exactly. I feel like in football, though, I feel like football is a little more established, because you're going to have, like, I mean, it may not be perfect strength programs, but strength and conditioning has been an accepted part of pretty much any football program to a point, at least at the college level, since like the 70s probably. Mm-hmm. And for sure in the 80s, where, you know, like sports like baseball, wrestling and stuff, you know, it's still not as accepted, because even like, you know, you'll still hear wrestlers, you know, some are only, you know, doing bodyweight training. And of course, that is sort of like what our program is like, we'll have in one of the programs, you have like different days. You have like a limit strength day where after limit strength, you have a bodyweight training day, and then you have a specificity type of day. So, you know what I'm saying? So there's different ways we do it in there, but I feel like in wrestling, you know, it's sort of behind the times in strength training compared to some sports like football.
What's weird too is like you hear about like many years ago, like maybe 20 years ago, they used to say, you know, to baseball players, they would be like, look, you don't want to lift because you're going to get too tight, much like you heard in boxing. But strength and conditioning programs were so generalized at that point. And it seems like, well, a lot of them were generalized back in the 80s and the 90s. It was almost templated, but, you know, there wasn't that sports specific kind of thing going on. So pitchers have to train differently than catchers have to train differently than, you know, an outfielder. And I think a lot of that was like, you know, people were just trying to push limit strength, but weren't going back to like the specific strength that they needed for their task.
Well, and that's sort of the issue we see. So I agree with you there. I think the pendulum swings either way with people. So then you have, then you'll get the other extreme where, you know, there's only like people trying to mimic the exact movements and things like of that nature. So I think there has to be a balance where get a certain amount of limit strength, but beyond a point, like you're training for powerlifting or whatever else you're training for, it's no longer benefiting the sport. You're getting strong to get strong, which there's nothing wrong with. But if you're, you know, pitching the major league, you know, you don't need to deadlift 750.
No, and you better make sure to take care of that arm.
Yeah, amen.
On your, like, a quick question on the book and on how you kind of, like, periodize it. How is the Grapple Strong training program organized? We kind of went through that a little bit, but are there specific blocks of periodization or more of kind of like a hybrid style where more of the conditioning and other, like, I guess where more of the conditioning and other more athletic geared movements are programmed into the training day? How does that work out?
So there's basically, you go from basically your it's sort of like a block periodization model, I would say would be the easiest way to kind of put it to the listeners.
Okay.
So you move from basically from general to specific if you're ready for that. And that's the more advanced program in the back of the book. And that's a little more leeway too, of not just saying do this much weight, this many reps. There's more parameters, like, you know, this day's for limit strength, select this, blah, blah, blah. And then we're in the beginning, it's more of like, if you basically for 2 weeks, here's what you need to do, like, to get up to this level of strength. Because I really think we're gonna need a lot of people that, honestly, I mean, because I've gone over to some, my wife plays volleyball in like an adult volleyball league, so we'll go over and watch her one night a week. And sometimes at the school, you go in there, like the wrestling, they have like, they're pretty dumb, they leave the weight room unlocked. I take my kids in there and we mess around, and it's amazing like how ass backwards, you know, a lot of the stuff is you see up there. So we have it both ways where I think if you're getting ready for the Olympics, you could follow like the more block periodized type of program, mm-hmm. assuming you have a set date in mind. And then if you're just kind of starting out, like, I think you could follow, some people could even follow the limit strength program in season if they were, you know, young enough and inexperienced.
I'm sorry, please.
And inexperienced. So Charles Poliquin is who many consider, you know, the top wrestling strength coach. He really likes the book, so I saw he posted on Facebook about it, which was pretty cool.
It's not a bad idea. I had several years ago, like, I was a bodybuilder,
sure,
and like, you know, I had like, I didn't have a foundation in strength, you know, I just did kind of like, you know, whatever I could and mm-hmm. that type of a thing, you know. I did the basics, but, you know, and I got strong, but not what I should have been. And so I flew out to a seminar in Las Vegas. I live in Michigan. So I flew out to a seminar in Las Vegas in probably 99 or 2000. And it was a Charles Poliquin seminar because I bought his book, The Modern Trends in Strength Training. And it opened my eyes because I was like, oh my gosh, okay, time under tension, the variability, moderating intensity to volume to sets range, and even, you know, it opened my eyes to a lot of training. So I owe Charles Poliquin a lot.
I totally agree. The guy's brilliant. And I think he's obviously a proponent of what we're talking about here is, like, you know, especially if you listen to his stuff with wrestling, a lot of it's like, you know, like even at the high level, a lot of it's pushing for limit strength, and that's what he sees people lacking. Uh-huh. And I agree. So like that's a great point. So I think what we're coming to kind of to just summarize this for people on this topic is, if you're doing a sport, you need a limit strength base on that sport, depending is how much of one. So if you're going to play croquet, it's not going to be as much as if you're, you know, going to play a lineman, you're an NFL lineman on a team that primarily runs the ball. You know, it's going to be a little different, but we need bodybuilding, whatever, that limit strength base. And after you have that, you specify from there, and things will go well. You'll have a longer career, make better gains, et cetera.
And also injury prevention too, correct?
100%. That's why I said longer gains, but 100%. Because, I mean, I think Mark Ripito said basically stronger people are harder to kill. I'd say they're stronger people are harder to injure. I mean, think about like in football, something, how often does the strongest guy on the team, you know, assuming he can move, he doesn't get hurt real often. You know what I mean? So, I mean, like, I never even in my whole career of football, all the way through college, I never missed even a practice from an injury, let alone a game.
Michael, do you know who Michael De La Pava is? Okay, Michael is he was like a Muay Thai fighter, and he owns Battle Axe Gym in Miami, and
I've heard good things about the gym.
Amazing, yeah. And Michael's a true badass, but Michael did Muay Thai, and he moved to powerlifting and strongman, and he's working with Brian Carroll right now because he was hurt last year. But Michael's got a T-shirt, and on the front of it, it says, "What is it? DBAP, don't be a pussy." And on the back, it says, "Strength is everything." And I thought that summed it up pretty well.
I like it.
Yeah. Do you find, and I'll get off this topic here because we beat it up, but do you find like martial arts instructors lack knowledge of the benefits of strength training in their sport, or are there still incorrect perceived notions?
So far of like I'm saying the people that have given us good feedback on the book, because obviously the book's only been out for, you know, a little over a month. You know, a month and a half. So it's not like, you know, a ton of people that have been using everything yet because it's just new, but really good feedback so far. But it hasn't been so much from instructors. It's been primarily high level jiu-jitsu guys. So I think, I feel the positive here is when I've talked to people and stuff and instructors and stuff, I feel like they're open to it now. So I think it's a lack of knowledge. I don't feel like, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't feel like, we're fighting anything necessarily. I feel like they're open to it now, which is good, versus I think a few years ago there would have been a bit more of a fight. So I think now they're open and looking for the knowledge. And I think that's kind of why we saw the spread for it, because same with the other book here recently, actually it's been the best selling one. This year it's been number one for a while. It's a keto book. It's like a lot of this stuff is keto built, is a lot of stuff is trying to, like, there's a need for it. Okay. Like, you know, for instance, like we're talking about, people are hungry for this knowledge. So keto, whether you like it or not, there's a lot of misconceptions about it. So I'm the first to say that's not going to be the best diet for everybody, but it works for a lot of people, and we want to make it as simple as possible for people. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of it's find a niche. So some of the books are just going to do it to do it because it's on your mind. Others is you see like a need for it, like, you know, I felt like this grappling book, bringing it back to this, there was a need for that.
I think it is. I think it's truly great. And I think it's going to help like a lot of, not only like, you know, not only like adults, but I think it's going to help a lot of the high school kids, and kind of hopefully like kind of take some of these strength coaches that are, or not the strength coaches, but the wrestling coaches, and kind of give them something to template to utilize with their kids too. So I think that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, and that's sort of the thing is, so that's why, like I said, we have some stuff, part of the book is like parameters if you're advanced. Part of it's like if you have no base, do this exactly. So we're trying to cover it for these coaches. So, you know, a lot of times someone might be intimidated to do it because they don't really know much about it. So we're trying to cover that and make sure that they actually know what to do when they do it.
Somebody once told me that if there's a zombie apocalypse, you find the boxers and the wrestlers and they'll learn how to survive. So
I can go for that.
Yep. So, hey, Josh, if somebody wants to get your book or you've
got what now, Chuck, cutting out.
If somebody wants to get you, are you there? Everything sound okay? Yeah. Okay.
Everything perfect.
If somebody wants to get like the Metroflex Gym book or your Jailhouse Strong, which is like an awesome seller, or the Grapple Strong, the Keto Built, where would they go to get that?
Go to Amazon. If you type in my name, Josh Bryant, I got, all the books listed, so they're all on there. So, I mean, I sell some of them on my website. Some of them I don't because of contract with Amazon. But Amazon's gonna be your one stop place to get them all. We got everything from there to even got a children's book on goal setting. So I got quite a few.
Very nice, Josh. What were some of the books that like you might be able to recommend to people that you've read over the years that like maybe things.
I think the one you said by Paula Quinn, right? That's a really good, I think, go like, so I think a lot of people should start actually back a ways instead of, you know, to kind of see to where we're at today, maybe start backwards a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think like, you know, Hardcore Bodybuilding, a Scientific Approach by Fred Hatfield. Awesome. Good.
Yep.
Power by Fred Hatfield was another huge one for me. the original Paula Quinn Principles was really good. So I personally would start back that way myself. So kind of move forward from there.
I think so too. And I think that like the Paula Quinn Principles and the Modern Trends in Strength Training, I think those are two of the books that like they actually made a difference in my life in as far as for training like myself and training others. I think because they were very basic and like, you know, he wasn't trying to mince words in that. He was like, okay, this is what it is. This is point number one. Here's a synopsis. Point number two, here's a synopsis. This is why German volume training is great. This is why it sucks. So I owe Charles Poliquin a lot.
Yeah. And that's why that's another one of my mentors. And obviously my biggest mentor is, Fred Hatfield.
Okay.
And,
did you know Fred very well?
Oh yeah, dude. So check this out. So honestly, I spoke at his funeral. So like I would say from 2015 January to when he died in May of 2017, that's the person I spent the most time with outside of a family member. We went to, I think we did 30 seminars together.
Oh my gosh.
We traveled to Japan for 10 days even. I mean, we went international. And we would, after the seminars, we would, you know, we'd stay up all night and we'd have a few beers together and just discuss everything we could possibly think of. So yeah, absolutely. That was my biggest mentor was Fred Hatfield.
I remember that famous picture of him, jumping after his 1,000th squat.
Yeah.
It's still like, I have that, like at one point that was my screensaver on my computer. He's an amazing athlete, and he actually broke things down very well as far as for things that I've read. Like I read Power when I was younger. I mean, if you look at Power, like I had it when it was like the 1970s book, like, you know, the old cover. And
looking at the 1970s one right here as we're talking on the corner of my bookshelf.
Wow, that's awesome. As a matter of fact, you were talking about the keto diet, and I have the Ketogenic Diet by Lyle McDonald I'm looking at right now. So it's funny, you know, we all kind of have the same library.
Yeah, I like that about Fred and Charles, though. I feel like they're brilliant, but I feel like they weren't trying to show it to people. They're just trying to get good information out there, where some other people sometimes, I think it's sort of their objective to show how smart they are rather than the reader take away something, you know, to benefit themselves and others. It's more like, I want to show you how smart I am and make it sound like a thesis. You know, we're 9% of the people reading it actually understand it, where Charles and Fred seem like they were more about, I want to get the best information to people. If it's complex, I'm going to make it so they can understand it.
Well, I remember Dave Tate put on, but Dave Tate always talked about Mel Siff. So, you know, Mel Siff was just a brilliant, brilliant guy, but I tried to get through Super Training, and that is a hard read. That is a very hard read. I remember,
pages and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
But the person who I've always looked up to is I love Dan John's stuff. Dan John isn't trying to make anything very complicated. He's just trying to break it down to.
Yeah, I don't know him. I don't know him as well. I mean, I know who he is and stuff. And I read forget the name of his book. I read. I know a lot of people have had success with this stuff, but I wouldn't be qualified as much. I don't know him as well as these other guys.
I just like how he breaks things down and makes things fairly simple. He's not trying to overcomplicate.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think, from what I've seen, he's not trying to show how smart he is. He's trying to actually make it useful for people.
Absolutely. So, hey, just let's go back to training a little bit, if that's okay. I've followed you for quite some time, and on Elite, you're like one of the main writers on Elite FTS, Dave Tate's site. And you've put, I don't know, countless hours, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of video out there for people. And what I really enjoy is I kind of like the fact that it's not like you're stuck in one rut when you're training people. It's not like you're like, okay, I'm only going to do the squat variation, this deadlift variation, and this, you know, bench variation. It seems like you're willing to try new things constantly. Like even your, like, you know, isokinetic stuff that you do.
Yep.
Where does that come from, Josh? Because, like, you know, you look at, like, Does that come from West Side? Does that come from like just a myriad of your reading? Or, and I'm curious about your normal programming. I mean,
You talk about the isometrics. I'm assuming not the isokinetic.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay. So let's start there. So that was on one of those. I don't even know what the hell it's called. It's one of those Russian training manuals that Elite FTS sells.
Right.
I was reading a lot on isometrics. And that's one of the only parts, you know, Fred and I were pretty eye to eye on stuff, but he didn't like isometrics. I did. I didn't really know. I know Anthony Diatello used to do them to a point. So I know Jim Williams did them to a point. But there wasn't any way. Okay. So that was more like, more of my kind of like just reading stuff and thinking it up, sort of how, you know, like Charles Poliquin has his origin and insertion supersets.
Yep.
And, you know, I asked him about it. I said, how do you come up with this? I just was reading anatomy books and it came to me one day. I said, okay, that's sort of what happened with isometrics is I'm reading all this stuff. And I didn't like the way people were doing it. So you'd see people, for instance, do like a pause deadlift. So they'd lift the weight up, lower it to where their sticking point is and hold it there. Okay. That's one way to do it. Second way, that's the worst way. Okay. The next best way was they'd lift the weight up and they'd stop at their sticking point, hold it, then come up. So that's a little bit better because you're never going to eccentrically stick on a deadlift. There's pretty much hardly any eccentric on a deadlift. I mean, you drop the damn thing if they let you, but you know what I mean? So like you're just getting stuck on the way up. So that's a little bit better, but still I'm like, okay, I initially did deadlift and bench press. I'm thinking, okay, why do you want to hold steady there? Is that really programming your central nervous system to aggressively encounter a sticking point? It's not really, it's just teaching you to, you know, hold steady. I said, dude, you got to like learn how to, you need to encounter that sticking point and you got to try to rip through it like a crazy man. You have to be as aggressive as possible. So started doing things against the pin with myself and a few other people. Mm-hmm. And the results were astounding. So then we started doing on bench press, same thing happened. And I don't know why in the hell it hadn't picked up more steam. I know some people do it, but I don't know. Maybe it doesn't like look cool to post on videos or something. I don't know what the deal is, but it seems like because other – I'm not saying that from a complaining standpoint. Like I wish people would embrace it. Like it's one of those things that other things I've put out there that I don't think were as revolutionary have caught more steam and popularity than that, which I think – I wasn't trying to – have that a secret from anybody, put it right out there, and it just hadn't caught on like I thought it would. I mean, but the people that have done it have set records and stuff. So, you know, that was through a combination of reading, you know, other stuff is like, you know, just like, you know, other stuff like using like chains on certain movements that for bodybuilding hypertrophy, you know, it's just, you know, thinking, okay, if it accommodates a strength curve on a bench press, why the hell wouldn't do it on a fly, you know?
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you can make the worst, most vulnerable part at the bottom where you're weakest. You can unload the chain. Then as you come up and it unloads link by link off the ground, you gain strength. It gets heavier and heavier. So now not only are you stretching at the bottom, you're overloading the entire thing. So some of it's just reading. Some of it's intuitive. Some of it's learning from other people. I mean, it's a combination of everything. And that's kind of the reason I like to write a lot is I feel like that's a lot of times my best education is coming up with writing an article because I'm going to have to explain why I do this to somebody else. And then I'm going to like expound upon new concepts possibly because, you know, if X plus X equals Z, you know, then X plus, you know, M might equal Y. You never know. So that you kind of just like stumble upon things when you're intellectually engaged and teaching it to other people, I guess.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Makes sense. They say the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Yeah, I definitely buy that.
It's because you get exposed too. I mean, if you don't know what you're talking about and you're teaching somebody, you get exposed. And if you do get exposed, you don't want to do that again. So you want to have a foundation to why you're doing something. So I think like in looking at your videos, it's absolutely like you can see that. I see like a mixture of a lot of different things. Like I see conjugate in your videos. I see, you know, Hatfield in your videos. I see Poliquin in your videos. Like even Poliquin talked about like the isometrics before too. And I see like all these different variations and it's exciting because it doesn't seem like you're stuck into this one training paradigm. And you seem to like if something doesn't work, it seems like you get rid of it. And if something works, you know, you seem to, okay, let's try this.
That's the objective. And so not to interrupt you here, or I'm sorry, I just don't want to forget to say this. Okay. So That's the whole point, is that's why I've never come out with like the Josh Bryant system, because if I did that, then all of a sudden you're no longer being intellectually honest, because you have a system in a box you have to adhere to. Because if you just come up with, this is the way I roll, this is how to do it, this is how you get strong, get big, blah, 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 then all of a sudden you want to add something to it and it violates the principles you stand on. Right. You're going to, you know, you kill your business or your brand or whatever. So I'm saying, like, okay, look, here's what's worked well so far. You know, this information I'm bringing to you is stuff I've tested on clients. It's worked well. I'm going to bring it to you. Okay. Then you know what? It's going to get better over time. So this is not like, I have the answer. This is like, you know, a constantly evolving hypothesis where there ultimately is no answer, because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. So it's a evolving hypothesis. It gets better and better with time, and you're not constrained by any kind of principles.
Like the Weider principles when you're grown up. Do you remember remember the Weider principles? Like everything was Joe Weider. Yeah. Yeah.
In the Weider principles though. I shouldn't have said that's the wrong, you misconstrued the word. I mean, like, principles could be like, I guess, my own principles that don't let me be open-minded. Like, so for instance, like Weider principles, there's plenty of good ones in there, but then at the same time, that's more like not saying, it's not like a specific program. It's saying, like, basically, like the, you know, the cycle principle of Weider, that's basically just periodization before periodization.
Right.
So
I know what you meant. I knew what you were referring to, but I just remember being a kid and you hear, like, you know, the Weider principle of this and the Weider principle of that. So, yeah, apparently it was the Weider principle of, you know, like, I don't know, stacking laundry at one point. So everything was a Weider principle.
Because that's what I get. Sometimes I've had emails like, well, this violates such and such of this workout. And I'm like, I don't really give a, I'm really sorry if this violates what you've been doing, but I'm all about results from people. I'm not trying to sell a system in a box. I'm trying to constantly evolve better ways for people, not try to like prove like a certain workout theory.
Well, like I said, all of that is, in my opinion, like looking at your videos and reading your stuff, that's apparent. And you see, like I said, you see, like, I think like a lot of us, and I think like a lot of, I'll speak for myself, a lot of like myself, or you get comfortable in certain things. Like for a while, I was extremely comfortable in conjugate. So everything was conjugate. And then, you know, just trying different variations, accommodating resistance, whatnot. And then I started to get comfortable, like, you know, Wendler came out with 5-3-1. And so I started to get very comfortable with, like, you know, doing the basic movements and that type of thing. But after a while, like, the same movements kept hurting my joints after a while. So I had to evolve as, you know, Matt Wenning said it the best, I think. He said, I try and take a movement, like a squat. I see where I fail on it. I find why I fail, and then I bring that weakness up. And I think it's, you know, he uses the max effort as an assessment kind of thing. But I think a lot of strength athletes get stuck in the same mode, and we tend to do the same thing, you know, until shit breaks, or it's hard to break out of a comfort zone. And I think it's kind of neat to see the way you train people, and or just, you know, and I'm only getting snippets, mind you, of what I see on video, but it's nice to see that you are not afraid to try something new and discard it if it doesn't work, or utilize it if it does. So I really admire that of your training.
I appreciate it. Yeah, that's the objective. So is not being married to a certain way of doing it.
What kind of you train like a lot of great athletes? Am I right? And you're training TD and Julius as well.
Julius, not TD. Dan Gibson works with TD.
Okay. Well, I just saw that video of Julius hitting the 700. That was 700? Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. He just posted an Instagram video of him doing 700 on the bench.
Yeah, he's on fire right now. Did you see when he's benching at the seminar that you came to?
Yeah, he did 585 for a double, and he was fluttering the bar. Like it was like I never saw anything like that in my entire life.
I was like, all right, you can do something light there, but that's why I'm glad Dan cut off TD too, because I wasn't gonna let Julius go any higher, because he would just come off a real high volume phase, and that's why I was so confident in his work capacity. It had increased so much, because like my theory on volume with people is there's certain, like, certain people do better with volume than others, period. But we can all increase our threshold, our work capacity. And Julius's work capacity is so much higher than it used to be. So I think, you know, at his meet, you know, he feels good. Like, you know, he's kind of before attempts, maybe possibly three. I think, you know, he's ready for an all-time world record on the fourth with the right energy. I think he has the gusto to do it now.
I never saw anything like that. I saw TD do the 585 for a double, and then I saw Julius do it. And, like, even if you look at Julius's grip, like, I mean, he's not way out on the rings, you know? I mean, his grip is a lot, like, you know, a lot more narrow than a lot of guys. And I was just amazed by it. That was one of the greatest feats of lifting that I had ever seen, because I'd never saw 585 flutter on a bench before.
Yeah, and that's sort of the key that shows you have an observant eye right there. Is it's not just, you know, because like the way he moved that 585 would, to me, is more impressive than like 635 for a double at normal speed. Just the way boom boom, it was just crazy. And same with the TD. I mean, that, there was just some energy in the room, and that's why I stopped him. It was a heavy bench day, and I think it could have got out of hand where they both go crazy and end up getting hurt or something.
I think that's smart. How do you gauge that, Josh? I mean, I know you know you have your set. I know you have your set plan and you stick to it. Your volume phases, your strength phases. Are you training different strengths at one point, like i.e. a conjugate or an undulating, or are you just focusing more on volume, bringing up your volume, bringing your intensity down, your volume up, or vice versa? Is that how you train and you block it? Or how do you formulate something like
it's
that?
It's generally more of a block, like you're saying, but definitely keep the assistance work up, though. So it'd be like similar in that regard to the conjugate, like Louis Simmons would talk about. Like, I think that's where I would differ with a lot of people on a more block thing, is I'm really big on assistance work.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in your assistance work, let's say you do your main lift. How much assistance volume? I mean, it obviously depends on what block you're in, but how many different exercises are you doing? Let's say you're training Julius to get his bench press up. Obviously he's an elite athlete, but you're trying to get his accessory movements up. Let's say he's weak in, I don't know. Let's just say he's weak in something. How would you bring that up as far as for your assistance?
So I'll give an example of Julius. Okay. So for instance, like on his heavy bench press day, right now so we're getting a little bit of lighter shoulder, chest, and tricep workout a different day a week, but he only bench presses once a week. Mm-hmm. So on his primary bench press day, so he went up to the 690. It was supposed to be 690 this week, and he called me and said, can I go to 700? And he sent me the video, and I said, yeah, because I knew this barrier had to be broken. And so I'm usually not a sucker for, like, you know, in the moment stuff, but I'm like, dude, we got to get through this. So smoked it. Okay, cool. So after that, he did 545 for three sets of three, focusing on maximum acceleration of the barbell. And I have him, a lot of times I'll have people do that touch and go, but with the really explosive guys like him, James Strickland, Jeremy Hornshaw, those kind of guys, I'll have them pause their speed benches just because they're so explosive. And then he did a little bit of upper back workout. He did some seal dumbbell rows for three sets of 12. And he hits upper back every single day because his main weakness is upper back and triceps. And then after that, he did 560 for two sets of two, close grip bench. He did rolling dumbbell extensions for triceps, four sets of 12. And then he did tricep ropes push down. He did 15 sets of six with a 20-second break. So it's like a cluster set. You know, he'd do six, the rest 20 seconds, then for 15 seconds. So that's kind of, again, how he brought his triceps up. And then he'll do some light tricep work again another day of the week and focus on some real light flies, some push-ups. And for his overhead stuff, shoulder stuff, we've been doing having good luck with a kneeling one-arm landmine press instead of overhead press. So he's been having huge success with that and, like, feeling pain-free, most importantly. So that's kind of the thing where this becomes a bit of a chess match. Is I think that's the reason no one's benched 800 raw yet, is it's not so much the human beings aren't, of course, they're capable of 900,000 raw probably. Mm-hmm. It's just getting people, like people get more jacked up benching than they do on squat. You know, if like your shoulder's really bad on bench, it kind of limits you. If your elbow's really bad, it limits you. Where squatting, there's so many muscles involved, you can get away with a little more banged up or deadlifting. So keeping these guys healthy. And so it's not only bringing up these weaknesses and this thing, but actually finding out which movements aren't going to cause them issues. But at the same time, not making these movements so regular that they're, you know, they're just used to them and don't ever hit stuff at different angles and whatnot.
Do you, like, it's funny that, it's funny, like, to people that are listening to this, 700-pound bench presser we're talking about is, excuse me, a 700-pound bench presser we're talking about is weaknesses. And the thing is, like, people have to realize that, I mean, everybody's got a spot that they're weak in. And you're always trying to take that weakness, build it up, and then reassess, and then, you know, find out where you're weak again. Well, reassess it, and it's a constant state of assessment, reassessment, assessment, reassessment. And I think,
well,
again,
the thing with Julius is he's a really great bench presser too. So, like, you know, those are his biggest weak points, upper back and triceps. However, a lot of his stuff we keep really strict and don't push the same limit, because I think that's sort of the issue you run into too, and you're going to find – if you work with elite people, you find this out. Is like, say, for instance, we say, all right, so, you know, say you can bench, I think a good guideline for your bench press, you should be able to do 70% of that on an overhead press. Mm-hmm. Seems reasonable. However, if you start saying that as like gospel, okay, so if Julius is all of a sudden, we say we get him up to 800-pound bench here raw pretty quickly, which I don't think is fantasy. But anyways – okay, so he's going to be doing overhead presses of 560 pounds. I mean, that's a little ridiculous. So there becomes a point where, you know, there is a point of diminishing returns, if that makes sense, where people, you know, say you bench press 300, you should do 210 on overhead press. It's not going to necessarily be the same when you bench get to a 700-pound bench press. There is structural balance, but at the same time, you could start working supporting groups to the point of absurdity and, like, beat yourself up.
And then, you know, like, you're looking at the point of diminishing returns, right? So, like,
yeah,
you know, what's the point of doing that overhead press if I'm going to injure my client?
Yeah, and that sort of was my own issue on bench press was I get to the point of absurdity because I'm looking at, you know, how much weight he's using on stuff. And I was lifting, a hell of a lot more on a lot of these movements, but never bench press close to as much as him. My best was 620. Okay. So – point being, I started using the accessory movements as an end instead of a means to an end. So, like, okay, instead of doing like a, you know, okay, I'm doing tricep extensions, pause on the floor, you know, 130 pounds in each hand. That's really badass. But at the same point, what's it do for you? Well, it got me elbow surgery. So that, fortunately, in this business, your own personal mistakes can be beneficial to other people. So it's kind of like, you know, I took one from the team and learned some stuff, you know, with my own problems.
Do you find, like, when you were training, like when you were younger and you were training, do you find, like, I mean, mobility work and a lot of the flexibility work has come up a lot over the years. Kelly Starrett does a lot of great stuff with Mark Bell, and Mark Bell kind of brought it to light. Do you find that mobility work and, I mean, because the thing is like, a lot of times, like, I mean, you kind of want tight hamstrings and you kind of want your triceps to be kind of tight, and certain muscles you want tight, certain muscles that you want kind of loose. But do you feel like your longevity in the sport or people's longevity in the sport has been, has gotten better because of the new kind of increase of mobility and body tempering and foam rolling and that type of a thing?
It seems like in theory it should have, but like practicality is not suggesting as such, but I guess it could be that people are lifting more weights too.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I think the problem with the whole fitness industry is things get taken to extremes. So for instance, like a lot of people will, you know, I'm so tight in the hamstrings, you know, I have to stiff like a deadlift. I can bend my knees like 2 inches. I can't even get close to parallel squat unless I have 700 pounds on my back type of thing. Well, obviously, I benefit from the mobility. You want tight hamstrings to a point, but if you can't get in the proper position, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and you now you can, you benefit a lot. So that's the point. Is like then you'll see other people that are, you know, that are pretty weak for the most part, and if plenty good mobility, I'll see them. Okay, I saw this yesterday at a gym, and I saw, you know, somebody wasn't lifting very much weight and they spent probably 30 minutes doing mobility before they squatted, and they probably warmed up on squat for about 3 minutes to their top set. And so, like, you know, they really didn't need that mobility work from when they started. They looked pretty mobile, right, but they looked very unstable squatting. They hardly took any time to warm up squatting. So it can be a really, really good thing. But it can also be just, you know, for lack of a better term, sort of just a big circle jerk to start, you know, the workout with people or whatever, just not kind of just doing it to do it.
Well, speaking of like stability, I see you do like a lot of different things with like one leg or unilateral.
Yeah.
Would you touch on that a little bit, on the stability and the reasons for that, why you tend to go more unilateral? Because I've seen you even do like good mornings that were?
It was the one leg RDLs.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, so there's a number of reasons why, obviously, because, you know, the strength deficits, things like that, you can obviously, so, like, someone wouldn't be familiar with this, if you could do, just say, like, you know, movement with one side, the bilateral deficit, so if you add the amount of strength you do on each side together, it's more than you do with both sides together, right. So that part, too. And then another thing I found is really good for this, just like a kind of a bonus tip here, is for people of like, if you're like, say like your arm's a half inch bigger than the other one or whatever, weaker or whatever, is a good strategy I found is doing, you let's just say it's your arm. So you're doing your right arm's 3/4 of an inch bigger than your left. So what you do, and it's weaker, the left's weaker. So you start off with, say, a bicep and a tricep single arm movement for the left side and do that movement to failure. Then you match the reps on the strong side. So what it basically does, volume equates. However, the intensity is much higher on the weaker side because you're going to failure versus, you know, on the strong side, you're nowhere close to failure. So that way you don't get it all out of whack with tons of different volume, but at the same time, bring the intensity up. So I found that's a really good way to kind of correct imbalances between sides.
Do you feel that helps like stability as well? Like, I mean, it's like, as far as for like, you know,
oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Josh, when you've trained, I mean, you train athletes, you've trained from like, you know, high school athletes and whatnot to, you know, like the top in the world, like Julius.
Yeah.
What kind of characteristics do you find in people that excel in like, let's say strength sports? Like, I mean, obviously genetics have this huge play into it. Like, I mean, if anybody's ever seen Julius Maddox, he's like, I mean, yeah. Julius is what, 6'5", like close to 400 pounds, but, and he's a lean. I mean, it's not like he's like an overweight like type of guy, but genetics comes into play. But what kind of characteristics do you see?
I think that's what we could sort of first off start with is, we know that obviously if you're achieving at a world record level, you have good genetics. So like that's a given. Cause I mean, it doesn't matter what, I mean, you couldn't achieve at that level if you didn't. So that's going to be a given. So we'll take that off. You mean, so obviously we'll take that off the table.
Right.
That being said, I think the biggest one is, the way they're doing it is they're kind of structuring their lifestyle around this stuff. So they kind of have like things in place to make this work. You know what I'm saying? So like their lifestyles kind of structure around it, like in the sense of like, you know, everything's kind of taken care of ahead of time. Like it's not like randomly, I can't get at the gym at 4 p.m. today when I normally go. It's like, no, everything's been structured to do that. That's one of the biggest ones is the whole, I'd say the whole lifestyle factor. Another one is like, I think the mental approach. I think all of these guys have a different, you know, they're on a different wavelength than most people mentally. They have huge, you know, amounts of mental strength and sort of sounds kind of like a broad brush, but it is because like, for instance, like Steve Johnson pulled American record 909 deadlift, totals nearly 2,300 pounds raw versus Julius. Like Steve's more of like headbanger kind of crazy guy and Julius is not. So you can't just say like, you know, one comes to the gym and, you know, just goes crazy and Julius is more laid back, but they both have sort of like the same focus, if that makes sense. So that's a huge part of its focus. Another one is, you know, they're lifting for purpose, not for, you know, a big problem we see now with people is like lifting for, you know, Instagram or likes or whatever versus like actual like substance. And, you know, that's sort of like the old thing. You can't be a better version of somebody else. So yes, there are people that are probably haven't accomplished very much. They're doing goofy things. They have a lot of followers on Instagram. But for every one person like that, there's, you know, 200 that are doing goofy stuff for the camera only and not getting very many followers, and they're not making any progress. So people are actually training with purpose, not just to entertain others, is huge. That inconsistency, you know, basically I would say if you work out 5 times a week, so that'd be 20 times a month or 4 weeks. You miss one day. Say you miss one day a month, that's 5% of all your, let's say that's 5% of all your workouts. Okay. So if you work, you know, 20, so that if you work 20 days, so say you work 20 days a month, if you miss 5 days of work, I mean, if you start missing 5% of all your work days, think about it, you miss, that'd be 12, you know, that'd be 12 days of work. And I'm assuming, I don't have a regular job, work for myself, but I'm assuming most jobs you just randomly miss 12 days when they're not planned or vacation, you'd be out of one pretty quickly.
Yeah, probably not the best way to keep your job.
No, because I know, like, for instance, before I started my own business, I was a teacher and coach, and you got 10 total days a year. You got 5 sick days of one and 5 personal days or something, so you got 10 days a year. Mm-hmm. And below that, you start not getting ill, you minimally don't get paid. You know what I'm saying? So like after missing, you know, 10 days, you would lose the pay if they let you take off more days. So that's kind of a point there, is if that's to keep a job, just to keep a job, you know, that's what we're talking about, be the best in the world. They're very consistent. They don't miss.
So basically, and to sum it up, it all comes down to hard work. I mean, that's flat out it. It's hard work. You keep your nose to the grindstone. You keep your goals in sight and hard work.
100%, and just keep I'd say that's the most part. And one I have of my own athletes is the ones that I have that are the best and achieve the highest. You know, listen the most. Like they're not going to be like doing goofy stuff. It's not like Steve Johnson going to be okay. You know, I did this today, you know, so like, you know, I had a good deadlift workout. So after I got done working, I went to the parking lot to see if I could deadlift my, you know, my truck or something stupid like that. Where like, you know, other people, it's sometimes like they're almost like children in the sense of they have one good workout and it's like, let's change this and that, you know. Okay, we're new off season now. Just come from me. Oh, dude, my trap bar deadlift felt so good this week, you know. I want to, you know, now do a meet in 3 weeks, you know, that type of thing. Or like, or my other favorite one is I'm finally feeling healthy. Okay. You're jacked up. Your body's not working. Well, I want you to get me healthy. As long as I can just lift a little bit pain free, I'm going to be happy. Okay. So 5 weeks into this, we got you feeling really good. This happens, you know, not sometimes too, more often than I think. Okay. So now we got you functioning right. Awesome. Let's start building up. Okay, I feel better. Let's go to a meet in 3 weeks. Okay, so now just because you're lifting moderately pain-free, we're going to push it to the limit and meet. You know, it's just like people that actually follow and stick to the plan in this case are huge. Anybody I'm training, I'm just assuming they're going to like not miss workouts and stuff. Or it's just, you know, if they're going to, it's just not going to be, you know, the right fit for them or me.
It always seems like it's people sabotaging their own shit. And yep. It's always people trying to overcomplicate shit. It's you know, like people sabotage themselves in work or in relationships or whatnot. They do it in their training too. And then again, a lot of people just don't want to work. I mean, you see it all the time, or you see people like, you know, like they got a meet coming up and like they're not taking it serious. They're kind of dicking off and, you know, it doesn't seem like they have that focus in the gym. And I don't know if it's like a release. And yeah, we all kind of dick off. But, you know, at some point, you're there.
Absolutely.
The object is, what is it? The goal is to keep the goal the goal.
Well, and yeah, also a lot of the people that are less successful, kind of amplify everything that happens. So like, for instance, if they have a good workout, you know, they can run through a brick wall, or, you know, one bad one they're going to pull out of the meat type of thing, versus like being a little more, you know, pragmatic in how they're evaluating things.
Speaking of which, do you vary as far as for like energy level? Like let's say you're training somebody and yep. they're supposed to do like, I don't know, five sets of five, let's say. Let's say their energy's not there. They didn't sleep. They didn't get their nutrition. Something happened there in their life. Do you modify that training, or do you just say, all right, this is still what I want?
Well, it would depend on the extent. So generally it's going to be, they're going to have a programmed weight to do. So they would go through with it, but obviously I'm not going to have somebody get hurt or something. So I'd say, contact me if I'm not there with them. Say, what's the situation going on, versus, you know, because sometimes you can go into the gym and not feel great, then actually turn out okay. But I'm never going to have somebody do something like create. We're not going to be dogmatic and just, you know, you're doing five sets of five at 500 on squat. Well, you know, last night, you know, I took a nasty fall down the stairs and I barely walked today. Well, great anyways, type of thing. But at the same time, it's not like, you know, okay, I slept 2 hours less than normal last night. I'm a little tired going, well, let's give it a shot and see what happens before, you know, we bail, type of thing.
Right.
But hey, Chuck, I got about 2 minutes here. Yep. I got to take.
I was just going to wrap you up, Josh. I was just going to wrap you up. Awesome. Where can people get information about you, Josh, or contact you, or try and like if you want somebody to contact you, or if somebody wants to get more information, maybe get trained by you, how should they contact you?
Easiest way to contact me is through my website, joshstrength.com.
Okay.
Then, of course, I'm also on Instagram at Jailhouse Strong, on YouTube at Jailhouse Strong, and then on Facebook, it's the Josh Strength Method.
Awesome. But Josh.
Easiest way to get a response fast is through my website. I'm checking that out.
We can't thank you enough. I mean, like I said, you were great with you were great with us at the seminar. You've been more than I know your time is valuable. I can't tell you how much we appreciate you joining us, and man, this is amazing stuff. I can't tell you how much we appreciate it.
Cool. I had a lot of fun, Chuck, and just let me know when it's up. Send me a link, and I'll make sure to get it out to people.
Will do, Josh. Thank you, and take care, man. Again, thanks for everything, man.
Yeah, nice talking to you. We'll talk soon. Thank you.